Welcome to Ex Templo, a podcast devoted to the spirituality of humanity in all its varied forms. Hi, welcome to the Ex Templo podcast for the week of July 16, 2007. This week I will be broadcasting the first of a three-part interview with Thorne Coyle, a local Bay Area pagan teacher and activist. I hope that you enjoy it and tune in for the next couple of weeks, and I will be broadcasting the next few parts. So how would you describe yourself spiritually? Are you a witch, neo-pagan, something else, all of the above?
I describe myself as a witch and a neo-pagan, or just a pagan. Witch is a problematic word, but it's the one we're sort of stuck with at this point. And the reason I still use that word is that I do follow a certain ritual protocol that other people that call themselves witches follow. So it makes it easy to say, yes, this is my ritual protocol. I'm a witch. Although it gets confusing sometimes when the general public asks me what I do, and I say I teach witchcraft, and they ask me what that is, and I explain it to them, and it of course sounds nothing like witchcraft to them. You know, I talk about soul development and alignment and all these other things, and I'm not talking about necessarily casting spells and things like that. So it's not a great word. It's the word I've got. Sometimes I just say I'm a pagan. I'm definitely a witch, and I'm definitely a magic worker.
What do you mean by a ritual protocol?
Most religions have a pattern in which they go about their worship or their practice of presence or whatever it is you want to call it. My Buddhist friends ring their bell and light their incense the certain way every time. That's a ritual protocol that sets up their space and takes them a certain place mentally and emotionally. And a Catholic mass follows the same form of ritual every single time. So a witch has a certain way of harnessing energy, delimiting sacred space. Most people cast a circle or a sphere, and then calling on or honoring the elements of life that make up all living things and whatever deity they might be working with or I might be working with. So that's what I mean by ritual protocol. It's the delimiting of this space and time. I'm doing something specifically spiritual here that's different from the way in which spirituality infuses itself in the rest of my life. So it has a little bit more to do with what we might call religion, which is, of course, just means reconnection. So it's a specific way to connect.
I see. And if you're describing like witchcraft, as you're saying, to people that don't know anything about it, and you're describing yourself and your practice, how you see witchcraft, how do you describe it in relation to that? Is it mostly about the ritual protocol, or are you kind of is there a wider scope to it?
The ritual protocol is definitely an important component to one calling oneself a witch. There are other aspects that bleed over into just general paganism, and that is that our concept of deity is not transcendent. Most of us work a lot with immanent deity. Some of us work with both transcendent and immanent deity. Language gets a little messy. I often say that I am a non-dualist and a polytheist. I haven't yet found a good catch-all word that means I connect with the great zero rather than the one. Because the one, as soon as I say one, it separates out and becomes a separate entity, which is where monotheists, I think, run into trouble. They're trying to go for unity by saying one, but then it becomes this separate being rather than what I call the fabric of all or the limitless. So I connect with the limitlessness, but the limitlessness also manifests in many forms, including myself and yourself. And that's where my polytheism comes in, because there are other variations of being in the realm seen and unseen. So that also makes me a witch. I traverse the realm seen and unseen. I do believe that the earth is sacred and that you and I are part of the fabric of God herself, of the divine. As I said, that bleeds over into general paganism also, but some pagans are what I would call hard polytheists. Mm-hmm. They really believe they're all just these separate entities. There's no unified field.
So gods as distinct beings that aren't connected particularly other than relationships.
Right, right. Whereas I firmly believe that we are all part of this limitless flow, just like all the little cells in my body are part of my body.
Mm-hmm.
They are their own entities. They're their own, you know, little cells, but they are also part of me.
All right. Generally speaking, our listeners may not know about your book or your personal history or what it is that you've been doing. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about yourself and your personal history kind of in a biographical sense.
Well, I've always been a spiritual and religious person from a very young age. I had some really profound spiritual experiences between the ages of 5 and 7. And that made a huge impression on me. I was raised Roman Catholic, and by about the age 13, I started questioning some of the core tenets and beliefs. And I remember asking my parents, well, you know, I think that Jesus and Buddha and so-and-so, I don't remember who I said, I think they're really all the same. And my mom said, well, yes, but you believe Jesus is the true God, don't you? And I didn't really have a good answer for that. And it was that finally caused me to leave Catholicism, was that concept of the only God or the true God or something that was separate from the continuum of other people's expression of spirituality and religion. That coupled with being mildly alienated from a deity that seemed very far away.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had a close experience with deity, the theology of it wasn't really working for me anymore. So basically, by the age 16, I could no longer speak the creed, the Nicene Creed. And when I could no longer speak the creed, I knew it was time to leave. And it was around that same time period that I discovered paganism and witchcraft and different concepts such as animism and the earth being alive and infused with divinity. And that was really exciting to me. It made a lot of sense to me. So I started on my merry pagan way at the age of 16. And I've been a pagan and a witch ever since then, with forays to explore variant religious systems along the way. I've studied quite intensively with the Whirling Dervishes.
Mm-hmm.
I have studied with some Gurdjieff groups, and I've also done some study in Buddhism. And by study, I mean practice. For me, study is not just an intellectual focus, although I do read a lot. I have a whole library full of books. But practice is the main way I connect and learn, and it's what really feeds me. So that really takes me up to present day. I mean, I've done a lot of different kinds of work, a lot of different forms of artistic expression, but that's my spiritual journey,
mm-hmm.
In a nutshell.
By these times practicing with various groups along the way, did you get involved with groups, like for the Gurdjieff workings, and spend a couple of years with them?
Yeah, I was with a Gurdjieff house for between 2 and 3 years, which was really valuable for me and actually gave me a huge context for which to reapproach my work in witchcraft and in my tradition. It all of a sudden made me really deeply understand what some of the tools and practices were for, really, that we use a fraction of our capacity as humans and we can expand more fully into our humanity and step more fully into our divine natures. That became very apparent to me in my time with the Gurdjieff house. And my work with the Dervishes, I studied with the Dervishes for 3 years also, and the physical practice of prayer that they have was really important to me too. Just like the physical practice that the Buddhists have is also really important to me. Sitting meditation, I think, is one of the most important and key practices anyone could do.
It seems to cut across traditions pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pretty well known in a certain sense as having a background in the fairy tradition. And I don't know if you consider yourself a fairy teacher or if you're considered by others to be a fairy teacher, but probably useful to ask about that and also just about the fairy tradition in general. So I know it informs a lot of your work, and I don't think outside of the paying community, a lot of people have heard of fairy and know much about what it's about or its conceptions of deity and, mm-hmm. and life and such.
The Anderson fairy tradition was founded about 60 years ago by Victor and Cora Anderson, although Victor would say he didn't found it, that it pre-existed. It's an American witchcraft tradition in that it predates British traditionalist Wicca in a lot of ways, although in later years, of course, it adopted some similar ritual protocols. Things kind of evened out after Gerald Gardner's work came to the U.S. in the 50s and 60s. But it draws a lot on American folk magic practices, and it draws a lot on variant magical traditions from the diaspora that make up the U.S., the African traditions, the Latin American traditions, the Hawaiian traditions. All of that ended up finding its way into the tradition in variant forms. Fairy, in a way, is syncretic.
Mm-hmm.
And why I call it syncretic is that it's not eclectic in that it just has taken a little bit from here and a little bit from there. It really came through Victor in his own, it came through his own practice, and it came through his own communion with the divine and with the other realms. And some of that information, I think, that came through him was similar to the information that these other traditions and other people had. And so he then said, oh, they also have this technology to explain what I'm experiencing. And so I think things got fleshed out via, say, Huna,
mm-hmm.
which is the Hawaiian native practice, and things like that.
So he drew on the similarities with his own visions and what he'd already received and with what he was seeing in other traditions and practices?
Yes, yeah. That's my theory. Pinning him down on things was difficult, just like pinning down any visionary is difficult.
Was there a unifying thread in that drew the fairy material together, other than Victor's personal vision and experiences and how he taught it?
I once asked Victor what the fey beings wanted from me, and he said for me to become more myself, for me to become more human. And for me, that's the unifying thread of the tradition. It uses spiritual technologies for us to become better humans, for us to become more human. To me, that's the unifying thread. That is coupled with this concept of God herself, of this great non-dual, actually beyond gendered entity is not the right word, but mm-hmm. it's a convenient word to call her goddess or god, whatever, that flows through all things and connects all things. So those two things coupled together are the threads that hold the tradition together. And they're the threads in many ways that make Anderson fairy tradition unique amongst other contemporary witchcraft traditions. For example, we have huge emphasis on soul development and soul alignment and getting to know ourselves in all of our parts and working towards becoming a cohesive whole. Now, not only do we want to become a cohesive, integrated being in and of ourselves, but there's an acknowledgement that if we come into that state of what I would call self-possession, then we are naturally fully in the flow of God herself. So in a way, it's some pagan and Wiccan traditions are very into like seasonal celebrations, which are important to place ourselves in the cycles of life. Or they're into heavy devotional work,
mm-hmm.
which can also be very important. And I definitely do a lot of devotional work, or what I think Sam Webster calls deity yoga.
Yes.
But the main thrust of my work is the alignment of my soul and my connection with the fabric of all, with the Tao, with whatever you want to call it from whatever tradition you're from. So that makes fairy a bit unique, I think.
By soul alignment, are you meaning in the sense of, like, say, putting yourself in line with the Tao or the way of the world, or do you mean something else?
I mean that and something else. Many, many traditions in many cultures throughout time, throughout the world, believe that the human has parts of soul, that we don't have a unified soul, and that the parts of our soul can all have different functions and different needs and different desires. And it's our job to get them into a place of clear communication with each other and a place of strong relationships so that, say, that my animal nature isn't pulling in one direction and my human rational nature isn't pulling in an opposite direction, and my life is not very effective because of that. And neither of them are connecting with the part of me that's connected with divinity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the state most of us live in. We are not in a state of integrity. We are not in a state of internal relationship. And we have all these variant personality parts, and we call each of them I.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am doing this or that. Well, am I really? No, it's this one facet of myself. I do not exist. I don't have a whole. You'll see the Gurdjieff influence on me here as well. So soul alignment in fairy tradition means I'm getting all my variant parts into clear communication and relationship internally. And when I have that, even if it's only for a moment, then I'm in the flow. Then I'm in the Tao. Then I'm part of the limitless divine.
But this is an ongoing process, right? You don't become a unitary whole or some such. These separate souls continue to exist.
The separate souls continue to exist. They continue to have their variant wants and desires. However, through daily practice of alignment, I can enter a state of becoming more unified overall. And I can also come to a state where there's enough of me that's in connection that I can recognize, oh, right, this part of me wants that. Rather than fully identifying with it, I can say, this part needs this right now. And yeah, I'm happy to give it to it. Or, you know what, it needs to wait.
You're talking about a certain level of awareness and abstraction, perhaps?
Yes, yes. So I'm not fully identifying with all the clamoring voices in myself. The other thing that happens is both metaphysically and emotionally, the part of me that is divine, that is more fully connected, over time, I'm going to establish a stronger, more firm connection with that. And I will eventually reach a place, if I'm lucky, where I can have constant connection with my divine nature. And once I have that, that's a state of full integration. I'm much more effective in my life because I'm acting more often than not from a place of wholeness rather than a place of dissolution. A place of dissolution is not the right word. A place of variance and disparity. So this is often what is portrayed in Christian iconography and Buddhist iconography. You'll see images of saints with a halo around their head.
Mm-hmm.
This signifies the descent of their divine nature, that they have full connection. It's no longer floating above them, above their crown chakra. It has descended to encompass their head as a sign that, they have constant connection with their divine nature, with their Buddha nature, with whatever you want to call it, their sainthood. And it's a sign that those people are people that are often teachers because they're people of integrity. They're people who are far better integrated than most of us are. So that is also a possibility. It doesn't mean that the saint never gets hungry or the saint never gets angry. It means that the saint doesn't have to get taken over by anger or hunger. And I'm using saint. We don't use that word actually in witchcraft, but it's a common enough term to describe this state.
it kind of touches on an issue that comes up a lot in a variety of spiritual communities, which is, you know, there's teachers out there that, you know, students look up to, they're gurus, and people discover that they're human beings, and that there's often a certain cognitive dissonance that occurs with people because they find out that, you know, their beloved teacher has the feet of clay that all of us do. And it seems to touch on that to a certain extent, what you're saying.
Just because someone has whatever you want to call the state, full connection, enlightenment, self-possession, doesn't mean their personality goes away. It's a spiritual lie that has permeated our culture for some reason. And it's very dangerous to the student and the teacher because all of our parts don't go away. I just say that they're more fully included. I want to include all of myself because all the parts of myself have life force. There are parts of myself I don't want to be controlled by, but that doesn't mean those parts completely dissolve.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That concludes the first part of a 3-part interview with Thorne Coyle. Tune in for part 2 next week, and I hope you enjoyed what you heard so far. Thank you for listening to Ex Templo. We can be found on the web at extemplo.org, extemplo.org. Our theme music is the song Gamaya, courtesy of the band Samadhi. You can find more of their work at immaterialmusic.com.